He was going to make her come to him. That was clear by the next morning. Lisa had half expected him to show up at the office before the end of the business day. She'd braced for him to be waiting outside. She'd been almost certain he'd patrol past her house. She'd steeled herself to get the confrontation over with when she opened her kitchen door this morning. Instead, he'd made himself at home in town. Her town. She'd received the first phone call yesterday, not more than 5 minutes after Sheriff Querton left the law office. The sheriff had stopped by, he'd said, on his way out of town to set her mind at ease. Apparently, she'd been under a mistaken impression that Detective Garrison wasn't the fine, upstanding law enforcement officer that he, Sheriff Querton, had ascertained he was. But now that he, Sheriff Querton, had checked out Detective Garrison's bona fides, why, Garrison was trained by the son of Sheriff Querton's old mentor, and a finer man never lived than Boots Radkin, so if Boots' boy said Garrison was a fine man, that's all he needed to know. She should rest easy, knowing that all was well, and not bother her pretty little head about a thing. He hadn't actually spoken that last phrase, but it had been the underlying message. So, when she'd picked up the phone and heard Deputy Jessup on the other end, she wasn't surprised that he said in an aggrieved tone, "You could have told me the guy's part of Querton's old boy network." She didn't point out she'd had no way of knowing. In fact, strongly suspected Garrison hadn't known either until he made it his business to dig up a connection. Neither did she point out that Jessup had jumped at the opportunity to strut his stuff by tossing a New York City detective out of town. She'd apologized and got off the line. She soon regretted her speed, because it left the line open for calls from folks who had heard about Garrison's arrival, departure, and return, and wanted to know the whole story. She'd fended them off at the office by insisting the line be left open for business. At home, she let the machine take all calls. But this morning, Ruth Mosky, the gray-haired organizational whiz who ran Dave's law office, had arrived with papers that could have easily waited, and said, "We're not tying up the line now, so tell me about this fella." Ruth's husband, Hugh, had been Shane's stool-sitting companion at the cafe. She knew he was a detective in the New York City Police Department, that they'd met when Lisa had been in school there, and he'd stopped by to say hello since he was, improbably, passing through town. Lisa had wriggled out from under the older woman's direct stare by pleading piles of work, feeding Ruth only the most basic information.
"He looks older than you," Ruth said.
"He's 35, I believe, she added, too late to do any good. Taylor appeared, requesting help finding a previous version of a file on her computer. When Lisa caught Taylor watching her with sympathy, she knew luck had nothing to do with the rescue, but she couldn't count on Taylor being around all the time. When the phone rang again and she recognized the number ID as Joyce Arbidick's extension at the bank, otherwise known as Knighton's Gossip Central, she flipped on the answering machine and made a decision. Since he wasn't coming to her, she would go to him. She expelled a long breath, gripped the arms of her chair, and stood. She rapped on Taylor's office door before opening it. "I'm going to be out of the office for a while. I have an errand to run." Taylor had no kind of poker face. There was the sympathy again. "Take as long as you need."